Hey everybody, this is Mandy, and I have biological cousins and play cousins.
Hi everyone, this is Ollie, and welcome to my birthday week and the M&O podcast.
You search for guys with the most things. Daddy ran away, left your mama with the keys to the Mustang. Yeah, keys to the Mustang.
Difference numerically between your play cousins and your, I guess, blood cousins?
What do you mean numerically? Like, I know that means numbers, but I don't
know. Like, do you have more play cousins than blood cousins?
No. I have more blood cousins, I would say.
Where do the play cousins come from?
The play cousins come from the people who I call aunt and uncle, and therefore their children are my cousins.
Got you.
But they're not biologically or adoptively or step-parentively in-lawed to my family.
Okay.
Do you got any play cousins?
I do. And growing up, I didn't realize they were play cousins until it was like, oh, they're my play cousins. Or I would bring one of them around with like a friend, and maybe we get to talking. They'd be like, oh, that's like your friend. That's a family friend. That's not your real cousin. I'm like, yes, it is my real cousin. Don't tell me. So, I do have some play cousins. Yeah.
I mean, usually with play cousins, you don't even bother to be like, no, this is my play cousin. You just be like, it's my cousin.
My cousin, right. My cousin.
I said what I said.
Yeah, I feel like that cuts down confusion. Yeah.
Yeah. And typically with play cousins, like, you probably see them as much, if not more, than your real cousins. You spend, like, just as much familial time or, you know, doing things, like, holiday related or whatever the case may be. So, besides, again, the direct attachment to a relation of the family, mm-hmm. It's the same effect of like, this is, you know them because of someone in your family, so
right,
same difference,
right? that is accurate. So what's going on with your goals as of late?
Right now, I am done with school for the semester, so for my goals, I've just put preparing for 2021 goals, no matter what is coming, because I feel like I did decently on my 2020 goals, despite mm-hmm. the fact that everyone can see 2020 was a sugar honey iced tea show.
Oh, my bad.
So I want to do the same thing where it's like I put my goals out there for the things that I want to do, and mm-hmm. Hopefully, and like really prepare to say, like, maybe have monthly goals and an overall lifestyle goal. Like, for me this year, I feel like that was the recycling, and I did really well with that.
Good job.
Thank you. So yeah, like a monthly goal, an overall goal, maybe a goal for just the year, that type of thing. Long term, short term, all that goodness stuff. So that's what I'm probably going to be spending the rest of 2020 doing, is getting myself together to figure out what I want my 2021 goals to be.
Okay. I think regrouping and refocusing and determining is definitely a great part of goal making, instead of just like coming off the fly with stuff. So good on you for that. Mandy sent me a post, and it was basically about vision boards and making them for 2021. It just made me think about how I had, probably in my lifetime, I've made 3 vision boards, and eventually they all, to me, aesthetically aren't pleasing, so I kind of get rid of them. But I do somewhat believe in manifestation, and also like being able to focus on like an image and, you know, have that refreshing in your mind about goals and stuff like that. So what I plan on doing for my goals is making a vision board, but maybe not a big one, because typically what I get is one of those big old poster boards, those 2 for $1 poster boards from Dollar Tree, and I try to fill that out, and I think that's too big for me and too big for it to be aesthetically pleasing. So I think if I just focus on something that's a little smaller and then just put everything on there, that would be helpful. So that's one of my goals, hopefully before the year ends.
Something that just came to me too is like, if you have a good digital creative program, kind of like, I don't think it'd be Illustrator. It'd probably be more like, I mean, it could be Illustrator.
Could be.
Something like that. You could do a digital vision board.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Like a Photoshop or a different Adobe InDesign program. Any of that would work. Yeah, that's a good idea too.
Yeah, InDesign's probably the best one because you would, that's for like if you had like a magazine or newspaper or whatever. So it's easy to do things where it's like you create a graphic, but also you can just grab a picture, add some words, all that good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready to enter into the safe space?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So,
what do you have on your docket?
So, my docket for today, I want to talk about how, yeah, we're in a safe space. This belongs here. How on my social media profiles, two of the many, I've revealed my face. And that's something that I've been hesitant to do for lots of reasons, mainly because I like my privacy. One, two, I don't like the interwebs, my FBI agent and his cohorts, everybody having my picture and doing whatever with it. And three, like, I want to be in control of who I allow to have access to my life. Because I want everybody to have access to me. And I feel like withholding my image, keeping my name obscure, moving how I want to online has allowed me to do that. Semicolon, however, comma, since I put my face on my profile, I've received not less than 6 unwanted friend requests and 3 messages that I do not care to respond to or answer from people I did not want to know that I was alive. So I'm trying to figure out now how to navigate this in the best way, because it's one thing for someone to be like, Ollie? It's another thing if someone would be like, oh, Ollie, I haven't seen you in a long time. You got to add me. Let's catch up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, ugh. I can't kind of get away from it now because my face is right there. So that's what I'm dealing with as of late.
This is an interesting topic for us to have because one of the social media that you nor I put our face on is for this podcast.
Yep.
And I think that was something like collectively we're both like, yeah, we don't really want to do that. Especially with it being a public profile, because we do want people to find us and follow us and engage in the whole podcast aspect, but we're also wanting to be able to have our own personal lives and privacy and all that stuff. So I definitely understand where you're like, want to keep certain separate things separate. Additionally, I just, you know, if people add me that I don't want to add or engage with, I don't add them.
Right. And, do you like do that by way of ignoring? Do you do it by way of deleting the request? Like, do you ignore the message that might follow up with that? Like, how do you handle that?
Oh, it kind of depends. I typically don't get messages with my request invite, so I can either just ignore or completely delete it if I'm like, yeah, I don't even want to see this. But typically I do just ignore.
Okay.
I'll leave it up there for years and years to come. And then, because one day I might change my mind and be like, yeah, I want to follow you.
I hate seeing that notification, like, though. To me, it's like a pending thing, and I'm like, I want you out of my notification list. I just want it gone, but I don't want to delete it, and you know I delete it. I don't know.
That does sound like a complicated thing.
Right.
I don't know much about all the social media things. I feel like you definitely know more than I do. Does it always tell someone when you delete their request?
It doesn't tell them when you deleted it, but here's what happens. So if I send you a request and you don't respond and say I check on it like a couple days later, if I'm able to send you a request again, that means you deleted it. Otherwise, it would say requested on your profile when I went back to go check. So it means you saw it was me and was like, delete.
But to me, that's even more so to say, like, for the requested to be on there. From what I hear, folks don't like to be left on red. And that's what I do. I'm like, all right, you going to get left on red, seen, whatever, because I'm not about to add you, you know, or even delete your request. I'm just going to leave it same way.
Yeah. It also is kind of like, it sucks because I did add two people that I haven't talked to in a very long time because they saw me through a third party's profile. And I was like, you know what? I'm comfortable adding y'all. But now what happens is that I'm getting those, people you might know things. So I'm like, I know if I'm getting them from people, these two people know that I just added, that other people are seeing my face as a people you might know thing. And I'm like, that's probably how these six people found me. And that's what I mean. You put one thing up, then all of a sudden, domino effect. So, yeah.
It's definitely true. I do that with a good amount of people where, like, sometimes I see a people you might know and I'm like, I didn't know you had a whatever this social media is. And then I do add them. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
But I feel like you asked for advice, and I didn't give you it.
Yeah. Well, you told me what you do, so.
Yeah. I would say, like, you know, delete those requests with no problem for you, since you don't like to see the clutter.
Yeah. Yeah, I can do that and just try to delete it and forget about it. Set it and forget it. You remember those commercials?
Nope. But if they're smart, they're not going to want to keep adding someone that keeps rejecting them.
That's true. I'm also not trying to hurt anyone's feelings, though. I'm just like, this is who I am as a person, and I do not want you to know me as a person.
And that is fair.
Okay. I got it. I'm deleting. Got it. Okay. What's your entry for This is a Safe Space?
So I have two things for This is a Safe Space, and I want to let you choose by actually telling you what they are.
Okay.
The first one is sex. I want to have a conversation about sex and really like discussing sex with people, and so a conversation about conversing about sex, or a conversation about when do you let things stay as they are, or when do you say, like, no, I don't want to keep going with just like the status quo, I want to change things up.
Oh, that's so funny, because I thought I heard the sex thing and I was like, oh, that's a hard conversation, I don't want to have that. But then you followed up with the second one and I'm like, that's a harder conversation. I don't think I want to have that. But the first question, are you assuming I'm not a virgin? Like, is that what's going on here?
No, it doesn't necessarily have to do with like you even participating in sex. It's about the conversations around sex and people's like views and like how they interact with people in regards to sex, and I can explain it a little bit more if that's the one you pick. But
I think I want to go with the latter one, unless you're trying to pull a me and it's opposite day.
No, I'm honestly giving you the choice.
Okay. I would like to go with the harder situation one. Yes, that one.
Okay. So, I was thinking today about, there's been a lot of things that happened throughout the year, and in particular, in acknowledging, like, certain things with race relations and police brutality and that type of stuff. So, I woke up this morning and I saw actor and activist Kendrick Sampson is on vacation in Colombia.
Okay.
And experienced police brutality. Mm-hmm. Apparently in the area he's in Colombia, it's very common for Black people, Afro-Latinos, or just Black people in general, to be constantly stopped by the police.
Oh.
He had that warning and he had like that understanding, but he experienced like abuse at the hands of the police, and it was also caught on camera by a completely separate bystander. Mm. And then has basically started trending because a friend of his who was from Colombia, she posted it, and then he of course was able to get that information and that footage and post it even while he was in the middle of dealing with the situation.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, I mean, this is an example of something that like came to my mind, which is of course like an obvious situation of people being like, I'm sick of the status quo, I'm not gonna deal with this anymore, because he was literally sexually harassed, punched, and had a gun pointed at him from the police officer.
Mm-hmm.
For something that he's been fighting, you know, in America, but he goes outside of America and continues to have to face this, which is the over-policing of Black people being treated like criminals no matter what they do and all that different kinds of stuff.
Right.
So it made me think about other things that I feel like, because of extreme situations like that that have happened, people have been more vocal about just saying, like, I'm not just going to accept any old thing in my life just because it's the status quo. Like, everybody's going to get this vocalness of me saying, like, I want whatever I want for myself, or I'm not going to accept just the standard status quo and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing that I thought about where I was like, I kind of don't, I don't necessarily accept this as a standard that has to change, is certain things with representation, which sounds weird, but I was thinking about how do I say this? When there's a lot of conversation about a minority family, or particularly a Black family, and the colors of the women or the children represented in the family,
mm-hmm.
And how like oftentimes the women or the girls are portrayed with like a light skinned child or a mixed race child and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about how, and this is, it's kind of a change, but also to me it's like more of a conversation, if as opposed to trying to have it be like all the skin tones of the people involved must match, or we must give like more dark skin representation, what if it was just like a free-for-all of like mixed races? What if everything that we watched was like Roger and Hammerstein Cinderella with Brandy and them, where it's like, this don't really make sense that this is their kid and this is their kid, but we're all going to roll with it because that's the story we want to tell, and we just want it to be an interesting story as opposed to all this background focused on their races.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of like, I wish that could be like what the life is, because I don't like the idea of like having this conversation around like it has to be like this way all the time, or like being upset if it is a light-skinned person or a mixed-race person, because I'm like, I still tend to root for those people, especially if they're like really good at what they do, like Yara Shahidi. I'm like, I'm not mad at her for getting all these roles or whatever. It also made me think about the new Little Mermaid that's coming out with Halle, and how Javier Bardem, I believe, is playing her father. And I'm like, I'm sure a lot of people will be like, why couldn't they just get a Black King Triton? But I'm just like, or they could just get Javier Bardem, and then they're going to continue to make the movie they're going to make. So, yeah, I just started going on a whirlwind in my mind about things that I'm like, is this something that's important to me to change, or is this something that I can accept as like being the way things are? And yeah, so I gave a few examples of like where my mind goes, but we don't have to specifically talk about those things.
So if we are talking about specifics or what you just brought up, I understand what you're saying, because when the Brandy movie came out, I was just like, dang, this is a great movie. Dang, these are some great songs. Dang, these are some like killer stars. And the fact that their ethnic backgrounds didn't line up was an afterthought for me, you know, like later on in life when I got older and people were making jokes about it. And I was like, yeah, that don't make sense. yeah, it wasn't my primary focus. It was nice to see such a diverse cast, and even better that the story was a good story and I felt a part of the story. So I do see what you're saying by is that something that's important to me, or maybe wishing the world were more of that way. And I don't necessarily know if I feel the same way. If like we backpedal or go back to the episode where I was discussing how I felt like lots of Black actresses and actors were starting to get their spotlight and it was being dimmed because now all of a sudden Black rights were becoming, well, everyone start their movement, everyone start their rights, everyone da da da, and it's just like, if one particular made up race, because that's what race is, has had their shine for so long, and then another race is getting their opportunity, but now everybody wants to jump on, to me, it doesn't seem balanced or fair. So that's how I kind of feel about that. I'm not sure if I fully understand the question. Is there a, can you rephrase possibly?
Okay. What are some things that you feel like you are fine in your life with staying as they are? And what are some things in your life or in the world? And what are some things that you feel like you're not fine with how they are and you want to change the standard?
So I guess I could start my personal life first. I feel like I do get comfortable and complacent in things. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I was having a conversation with my mom the other day and she was talking about that's how she is. I was asking about a relationship she had, and I was like, why did that go on for so long? And she was like, you know, I'm comfortable in this and that, da, 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 da. And she's like, I think you might have inherited some of that from me. And I thought about it and I was like, maybe that's partly right. I feel like unless something drastic happens, then I will remain complacent and comfortable and in a familiar zone for me personally, even if 10,000 red flags have gone off telling me you need to get out of this situation. Like that familiarity, that comfortableness, that knowing is kind of what keeps me there when I know I should leave. So that's for me personally. For things that are kind of in the world, when I think about like politics and when I think about business, I feel like the day-to-day people that I know, I interact with, or people that could, I don't know, one day be my supervisors in corporate and stuff, I feel like we are minuscule on the totem pole of people who know what's really going on. So when I think of like the bigger picture and get nervous about who's really pulling the strings, like who invented money and said that this is currency, who owns all the money, the Rothschilds and the government and stuff like that out of my control. When I think about that stuff, that's just kind of like more than my brain can like, not necessarily process, but wants to process that kind of stuff. I'm just like, it is what it is. Like, I don't foresee myself climbing up that ladder. And I think about the people who've tried to climb up that ladder and whistleblowers and people disappearing and dying. And I'm just like, I shouldn't even be talking about this right now. So that kind of stuff, I'm just like, it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be. And it's not within my control. So I leave that alone.
That's interesting. I feel like I have a somewhat opposite feeling. I feel like a lot of things tend not to bother me personally, or I feel like where other people, even if someone's trying to directly affect me or make me feel some type of way, I feel like I don't, or if someone says something or does something, like, even, I mean, to a certain extent, some kinds of like microaggressions. I won't say like full out aggression forms of racism. If someone called me the N word to my face, that in an angry, aggressive tone that wasn't a black person, or if someone slapped me in the face, I'd be like, for being a woman or whatever the case may be, I feel like, of course, I'd be like, no, that's not gonna fly. But if a guy says something condescending to me about being a woman, or if someone does something that's like racist to me, but I feel like it's like a microaggression, I would look at them crazy, but I feel like I won't be like, this is the fight I have to take, but, or the hill I have to stand on. But I feel like on a grand scheme of things, I do more so want to fight those larger fights, or at least support other people in fighting those larger fights, because the idea of how it affects other people bothers me more, because the circumstances that other people face, I'm like, I guess I feel like I can control how I respond to things, and I'm less worried about it becoming an escalated incident for me. But for other people, I can't control those circumstances, so I'm just like, I want it to be better for them so that it never has to go badly, because there's a lot of situations where like it shouldn't go badly, and it does go badly, and you know, people did all the right things,
right,
and it still goes badly. Or or in the case of like people being sexually abused or harassed or whomever, I'm just like, I often think of like children, and I'm like, there's so many things or circumstances, even in parenting, I'm like, there's circumstances that I've already gone through and I might accept, but I also understand that as a kid, you couldn't control the things that your parents said to you. You couldn't control or do anything about it. Like, if it bothered you, and you would just be in this like very harsh reality of being hurt and upset, and it affecting you long term. So I'm just, so to me, that's when I'm more like, you know, as a society, we should try and consider these things in parenting, or consider these things in race relations, or consider these things in sexual abuse, or consider the, like, I feel like as a society, I want to make more of those changes and speak more to those things, because I want it to be better for the general person, and do more for the general good, as opposed to me as an individual, because I'm like, more than likely, I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch something on TV or do something to keep myself from stressing out about it. It just feels like a personal actions that I've taken towards like reducing my stress level or maintaining like my peace, that I can't necessarily guarantee for other people that they will respond that way. So I want the environment to be better for other people.
That's nice. It sounds like you have a very communalistic standpoint or mindset, so definitely helpful for putting other people ahead of yourself.
I think
thinking for the future.
Yeah, I don't even look at it as putting it them ahead of myself, but I do kind of think of those things sometimes, and it does bother me if I feel like there is something I could have done for someone else that I didn't do, as opposed to things I could have done for myself, because I'm in my mind, I'm like, either, oh, it wasn't that important if I didn't do it for myself, or I could do it tomorrow. You know what I mean? But like with other people, it feels like you don't often get multiple chances to make things right. So you want to take those actions as you can.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm like, I could just let, I saw, like, for example, if I see what looks like domestic violence happening, and I'm like, oh, I should have said something, it might be too late. I might not get another chance to change that thing. Like, that person, I don't know what could happen with that person. I'm probably never going to see that couple again. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I feel like, though, for some specific things, when we involve ourselves, it can be worse. So I can vouch for myself and I can vouch for those in proximity to me. But when it comes to strangers, I'm not so sure. So yeah, I'm more hesitant to do that. It's not that I wouldn't do it, but I'm more hesitant because I'm like, okay, well, what if this turns into him or her actually killing their partner because I tried to intervene? Or what if I intervened and it was like absolutely nothing, but now they have eyes on them and I've made the situation worse? And it's like, for the greater good, like, yeah, okay, it's good that everything's all good and stuff, but now I've brought some anomaly into their lives. So that's how I think about those kinds of situations. Like, am I certain that what I'm doing is actually being helpful? Like, is it actually going to help?
And that's
why I'm hesitant.
That's real. Like, I'm not saying like every time I see something that is the negative right. situation, I leap into action, like, you know, Superman in the phone booth. But and going back to what happened with like Kendrick Sampson, it was a bystander videotaping what happened mm-hmm. to him on the street that was able to, you know, then go back to his friend and be able to post and create this thing. And that's often what happens with a lot of these police brutality situations. It's a random person that isn't involved
right.
that takes the time to say, like, I'm going to put this on camera, because regardless of, like, you know, not knowing how the situation is going to turn out. And then that, even if it turns out badly, it allows at least for the conversation to be had. For the right. realities of like what's going on to be seen, because as you can see, like, it's not always trustworthy for the parties involved to be able to just like speak to what happened. Or even in the cases of like after all these things start happening and they added body cams, we still can't, the body cam footage somehow disappears or the camera's not turned on or all these other malarkey things. Or even with the body cam footage, it's just like that outsider assistance feels very necessary to me.
Yeah, it like you said, it is for the greater good. I do feel like, or maybe that's not what you said, I do feel like the outsider assistance is necessary and definitely helpful, but like you said, it doesn't always end in positivity. I think about the guy, run-on sentence, doesn't always end in positivity, period. I think about the guy, and I just looked up his name, who filmed Eric Garner's death, Ramsey Orta, and they like charged him, and all he did was film. He was away from the incident, not intervening, and they charged him and kept trying to throw the book at him, and they jailed him, and I don't know if he's finally been released or not. Also confirmed his release. Okay, so he has been released, but for the longest they were trying to implicate him, and it's like, I'm just over here recording y'all not doing your job the correct way. So it's like, even if you're an innocent bystander, you can kind of get swept into this cycle of wrongdoing. And it just kind of sucks that you're trying to, again, be an innocent bystander and just record the truth, and you can still see consequences for doing that.
And yeah, and that's definitely like goes to the overall question of like, when do you just like let things stay as they are? When do you just like not mm-hmm. let it be an issue for you, or when do you say like enough is enough, or I want to do something about this in general? Like, not even to say like today I plan to take a stand, but just to say like today right. I plan to do anything besides the norm.
Right. I'd say for me, if it's like happening right in front of my eyes and I can intervene, I would like to think that I would. If something's happening and I'm questioning, is this what it is? Then I feel like I'm more than likely to not intervene. If I have to question it or be like, I don't know if I'm seeing what I'm seeing is correct. So I think that's how I operate.
I recently had a multiple dilemma situation where I've been keeping these bags in my car to give mm-hmm. to people that appear to be like homeless or just in need.
Nice.
So that I can just like quickly give it to them. Mm-hmm. I was in line to vote And at a library, actually, and I saw this person that was sleeping outside. I wasn't even close to them yet, because the line was long, but they were sleeping, like had like all of their little packs and stuff, and they were in, had a sleeping bag, and it was very cold outside. So I was like, oh, maybe, you know, something that I have would be helpful to the person. So I was thinking, okay, when I get out of the line, because it's already a long line, I know it's gonna be a long wait. When I get out of the line, and I wasn't close to the person yet, I was like, okay, when I get out of the line, I can just go back to my car and give them what I have in my car. Before the line even started to move for me, the person got up, and I was just like, no, wait, no, I want to help you. I want to at least get, like, I might have cash in my purse, even if the line moved a little bit. I could be like, hey, here's this cash, even if I can't give you what's in my car. And they just walked away, and I just felt so conflicted, because I'm like, I'm over here trying to do one thing which feels like it's for the greater good, but I'm also want to do something else which is for the greater good, and I could do both, but it's like I'd have to be inconvenienced to stop doing this one thing to help them to then get back in line and do this other thing. And I just feel like it's a constant. It's never like so simple of black and white, or just like a constant black and white, right or wrong, or do it this way or that way. It's just like this constant battle of like, when do I just like do nothing, and when do I do something? When do I let things stay as they are? When do I try to make a change?
I feel like in this case, you were stuck between a rock and a hard place, because I mean, I guess you could have asked the person to save your spot, but if you, it was like your turn next or your turn soon to vote, then I don't know how that would have worked out.
It wasn't my turn next. Like, I still had a long ways to go, but I also just felt like I don't trust some
the person to save
your
spot.
I don't. I'm sorry. I really don't.
Really?
I don't think. Really? I don't.
Did you look behind you to see who
I know who's behind me.
Okay.
Because, it wasn't this person, but it's another thing that I just like feel sometimes when I'm like doing certain things of civic duty, or just like in a general things that I've learned growing up. If I see someone that's older, I try and say ma'am or sir or miss or whomever and blah, blah, blah. Because it's an older person and it's a sign of respect. And I feel like definitely instinctively I do it. I also feel a ways about doing it when it's a white person. And that's like one of those things that's like an inner conflict for me. I'm like, especially because they're an older person, I'm like, do they think I'm doing it because I'm subservient to them, or do they feel like, yeah, you should call me ma'am or sir or whatever, because you're, you know, girl, or like, it's very hard for me. In my mind, I'm just like, no, it's, you know, how my parents raised me to respect people who are older than me. I did it literally in that same line. There was an older white woman that I thought was standing up because she didn't have a chair while she was filling out her paperwork, and she was just standing up because she couldn't fill out her paperwork sitting down. I don't know, you know, old people problems. But and when I did it, there was an older black woman there that was facilitating, so she kind of like, she did look at me, but she was like, you know, saying that's nice. Like, I feel like she understood that I did it because this is an older person and not because this was a white person. But in my mind, it was still just like, but she's a white person. I don't, even if this black woman understands why I did it, I don't want this white woman to think. Because I do it all the time for stuff where I'm just like, if we're walking down a street and anyone is coming, I tend to move out the way. That's just how I am.
That's so funny, because I'm the opposite. There was this... I think that's why we work well together, at least on this podcast, because our perspectives are different. Well, when it comes to giving to people who are in need, I think I gave you all the story about my mom and the McDonald's and the man throwing it on the ground or whatever. But when I see white men holding these signs, especially young white men, I'm just like, F no, I'm not giving you anything, especially since black women, let's be real, even though, yeah, we're booming in business, we're booming in education, still at the bottom of the economics totem pole, still at the bottom of the respectability totem pole, whereas white men can go in, hey, I'm a white man, you're hired. So let's not act like you don't have advantages over me, a black woman. So when I see especially young white men saying, oh, we'll take anything, money, food, beer, whatever on their sign, I'm just like, nope, nope. And the other day I was out with my friend and there was this older white man with the sign, and for some reason I had an urge to give him something, and I was like, what am I doing? Like, no, that's a core principle of mine that I do not, if I have food or whatever it is, I do not give stuff to white men, especially after seeing these documentaries where these people go on the street and they're asked for all these different things and they go a couple of blocks down. And this is some of, these are some anomalies, but more or less anomalies than not, but they go a couple of blocks down, they drive off in their car, or they talk about how they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars tax-free every year. So when it comes to giving to white people, I find it very hard to do as a black woman. But when it comes to, oh, I'm gonna give you my seat, nope. Oh, I'm gonna move out the way, nope. There was this man who was trying his hardest to squeeze between me and my cart to go down the aisle, and I didn't move an inch. Cause I'm like, you can open your damn mouth and say, excuse me, or I'm trying to reach this or whatever. And then finally, I don't know if it's cause he was about to touch me or what, he was like, excuse me, I need to get by. I was like, sure, sure. Move me and my little cart around. But what you're not about to do is act like I'm not a human and I don't exist. And like, you can't utter an excuse right. me, or may I pass you by, or may I get this? Like, I'm less than. That's what you're
right.
not about.
Or like, you deserve the right of way, so you don't have to say anything.
Yes, yeah. Especially that you deserve the right of way, or you see me and I'm trying to get this, so you need to part the Red Sea for me. Nope.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it's definitely it was something that like there were just so many things that were hitting me throughout the week that I was just like, mm-hmm. what is the move here? Not that there's like a right move, but is there at least, not that there's just like a standard of right move, but are there like sets of laws mm-hmm. or sets of options that I can give myself where it's like, in this category you do this, in this kind of situation you do that,
right.
and I still don't right. have that, so I'd like and but it sounds like you do, it sounds like you're like, you know, white men don't get nothing out of me.
Yep. At this point, yeah, I did, I'm not afraid to say or like reveal to you all, I did at one point date a white person. So it's not necessarily in regards to like relationships or romantic things, but in regards to strangers who think, again, I'm a white person and I have the right of way for everything in life. I'm like, kick rocks and kiss my brown ass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it's understandable why you would say those things. I think that's all I'll do for now on this. This is a safe space. I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up talking about this subject again.
Okay.
Now you see what I'm trying to get out, right?
Okay, mine's kind of quick, I think. Well, every time I say
that, you're meat and potatoes, because we're in meat and potatoes now. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. You didn't let me introduce it though. You didn't let me finish. Yeah, I was gonna say my ideas are kind of quick for the meat and potatoes section where we are now. Okay, get your plate. So everyone has been on Lizzo's neck. Lizzo got online. Lizzo is an artist. She's a plus size artist, entertainer, dancer, comedian. She's just an all around cool person, in my opinion. Flute player, yes. She's a BAB, a badass, bad mama jama. So she got online And she basically, she's also very body positive, pro body, pro look at me and my body. Like, I'm not going to be ashamed of it. She got online and she was saying, she looked at herself in the mirror one night or one day she got home and she felt disgusted. She didn't feel happy with her body. She didn't feel at her best. And she went on to describe just how she'd been feeling, that she was depressed and moody lately, which is, I feel like, a given if you're in the entertainment industry, also a given if you're a human being, a third given if you're in quarantine. You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not mad at her for any of that. And so something that she said was that she'd been drinking lately. She'd been eating junk food, spicy food, and she felt like she needed to detox her body. So she did a 10-day detox and was doing like liquids and smoothies, hydration. And she talked about how she felt better in the mental space. Her body felt better. She felt like she got back to her normal. She kind of detoxed all that bad stuff and reset. And people have been coming at her, like, how dare you promote a liquid diet, and you're supposed to be body positive, and this is going to create eating disorders, and blah, 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 blah. And so people were just going on going, and it just made me, I feel like I already realized it, but it made me more aware of the fact that people kind of don't understand certain words or know what certain words are. I felt like reading the comments and the responses, people don't know what the word temporary and detox together means. I feel like people don't know what the word depressed and reset means. I feel like people don't have basic reading comprehension. I feel like that's part of the story. The other part is that people, I feel like, do not view celebrities as human beings. At the end of the day, these are human beings, and they are allowed to do with their body what they want to do with their body. Just like you're allowed to be over there miserable and sulking and comment nasty things at her, she's allowed to do what she wants with her body. So that riled me up a bit. I was just like, whether she wants to be body positive and have a day of weakness, which she chose to share with you, she chose to bare her heart about how she's feeling about her body and how she wants to reset and get back on track. She didn't say, I'm doing this to lose weight. She didn't say, I'm doing this because I'm a fat, blah, 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 blah. She said, I want to reset and get back to my normal. And people are just like, you're responsible. You have a platform, you this, you that. And I'm just like, I'm tired of people expecting celebrities to be their role models. I feel like a lot of parents look at celebrities to raise their kids. I feel like a lot of adults look at celebrities for how they should go about their day-to-day life. And I'm just kind of tired of that. I just feel like if you want to reset and detox, to lose weight or to clear up your depression or to clear up your acne or whatever it is you want to do with your body, that's your choice. Your body, your choice. So that's how I'm feeling about that.
It really makes me sad. And you basically said the same thing, that like she tried to have a moment of vulnerability and she was attacked for it. People tend to, like, in order to be a celebrity, like a really big time celebrity, I feel like nowadays you have to show and give up of yourself. Like, there's some people who will be celebrities no matter how much or how little they show of us. And I feel like it's like in the old school vein, like Denzel Washington is always going to be Denzel Washington. We don't have to get Denzel Washington the reality show in order for people to be like, that's Denzel Washington. But nowadays, a lot of celebrities, you want to be able to follow them on Instagram, you want to be able to follow them on Twitter, you want to be able to see the things that they eat and post and their common daily activities and who they're dating and all that stuff. Like, they don't get to just have, where the celebrities are expected to go through media training and know how to respond in such and such a case, but fans or just followers don't feel like they have to do any of that. Like, they don't have to respect boundaries, they don't have to be mindful of the things that they say or do, because they're not the one that's famous. And it's like, no, but you are a human. And I hope you are, you could be a bot, but you know. But the thought process to me is like, just be mindful, try and be human, try not to just post everything that comes to your brain. Like, you don't have to. Even if that is how you feel, if you feel like Lizzo let you down because she went on a detox, which is actually very necessary. Like, yes, everyone should go on a detox periodically. You don't know what the heck is going on with your innards, but you should definitely try and clear them out every once in a while to make sure that they are re-regulated. Everything needs maintenance in your life, including your body. But if you're like, I'm mad at Lizzo for trying to detox and clear out her body because today I ate a chicken sandwich, and if Lizzo is detoxing, then that makes me feel bad for eating the chicken sandwich, even though she didn't say I should feel bad for eating the chicken sandwich. Right. It's like, all right, well, you need to clear out your mind too. Like, just let all that garbage out. Write it in your little diary or notebook, but don't put it on the internet because it lives there forever. And let that be it.
Right. Agreed. What's on your plate for meat and potatoes?
My meat and potatoes is something random that I was thinking about, and I thought, let's do it on the podcast, which is things about Ollie that I remember that have made me laugh.
What? That was random?
Yep, that's what I said. And if you'd like to share anything about me that you remember that makes you laugh, you can do that.
Okay.
If you want to. So okay. I'm going to share two things about Ollie that I remember that make me laugh. One is from a time when we were in a service organization. Mm-hmm. And this service organization used to go on these things called retreats, which I really loved so much. Like, I could go into this organization so much and why I loved it, but the retreat even more so. It was a student-led organization, which basically said that, like, we trust you as students to be able to respond accordingly because we were supposed to be building up ourselves as leaders. And with the retreat, there was only, like, one or two adults to, like, 20 to 30, maybe 40 high school students, and then some college students that were there as facilitators, but the college students that were there were like people who used to be in the organization as well. So they're looking at us like, you know, y'all mature enough to handle yourselves. It's not like they're chaperoning us like, don't do this, don't do that, blah, blah, blah. So one day on, or one night rather, during the retreat, we were up late.
Oh, I know where this is going.
We're up late because you could do that at the retreat, stay up all night, and hang out in people's hotel rooms and stuff. And we were doing that. I don't remember what we were talking about, what we were doing. I feel like it was like one facilitator in the room and like a bunch of the high school students. But Ollie was falling asleep, y'all. And that's fine. It's late. But Ollie wasn't just going to sleep. She was eating and sleeping. And we're all like, is she? And she was eating a bag of what I believe to be were hot Cheetos. And we're like, she's asleep or is she eating? She can't be asleep because she's eating. So then we'd be like, Ollie, or saying something, and she was asleep. So we're like, maybe we should take the food out of her hand because we don't want her to choke. So somebody tried to take the bag out of her hand. Ollie woke up, look at them like death, like she was going to murder them for picking her hot Cheetos. Like, they're just like, oh, I'm sorry. They let her go back to eat her hot Cheetos. And then she went right back to sleep. And it was like, and went right back to sleep eating the hot Cheetos. And it's like, if you choke, it's not our fault because we tried to stop you. And you got mad in your sleep. Like, you was going to sleep fight if someone tried to take your hot Cheetos because you was trying to sleep eat.
That sounds hilarious.
It still gives me a chuckle. I still knew find it so funny. That's
where this was going. So, yeah. Funny.
Okay, you want to do one?
Yeah, I have one. There was a time, I don't remember what we were talking about, but Mandy and I were on a phone call, you guys, and she said something. I don't remember what she said, but I didn't know if it was to I know what happened. We were on a phone call and somebody was calling her and she was like, oh, I think I'll just call them back. And I was like, oh, I feel special. And she was like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. And every time I think about that interaction, I die laughing. A lesser person, not even a lesser person, but someone else might take it offensively. But to me, it was the funniest thing. She's like, oh, I didn't mean to do that.
Well, I didn't want you to feel special. I just, like, you know.
I just called him back later, that's all. Like I was nothing. I went from something to nothing. But hero to zero and no top flat. So yeah, that's one thing.
Because I only thought of two. I'm sure I could think of more. But the second one that I thought of was my ex, who I always talk about, my ex this, my ex that, blah, 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 blah. So I really only have like one. Like technically I have more than one, but really I just have one real major ex in my life. Mm-hmm. So when I first started talking to this...
I know where this is going to.
I'm sure you do. When I first started talking to this person, I used to always bring my friends around. So Ollie's pretty much been there from the beginning of what was our relationship. So I think this was before we were even like officially in a relationship. But we were out with friends and I was talking about the guy I was dating, who's not my ex. And we were in a car with friends who had not yet met him. And I don't know if I was saying, I don't even think I was like complaining about him. I think I was just talking about him. And Ollie was like, well, I never trusted him. He's not good for you. And I was like, why? She's like, he got untrustworthy teeth. And it was just the funniest thing. The person we were in the car with, that we were, I think, going to like a group dinner, he then went and told everybody like, man, you dating somebody with untrustworthy teeth, y'all. And it was just like, and all the rest of us are like, how are teeth untrustworthy? The thing about it that's very comical, why I still like laugh about it to this day, is because I still don't know what untrustworthy teeth are, but I will say that my ex's teeth are very, they're not bad teeth. It's not like,
they're not bad teeth,
but like when I think of, when she said it, I automatically was like, I could think of my ex's teeth. You know what I'm saying? Like his teeth were distinct, even if I don't know what untrustworthy means, and they're not bad teeth, but it's just like, okay, those are his specific teeth. So now even if untrustworthy teeth became a common theme, which I'm sure it never will, it'd be like, well, those are the teeth that I know are untrustworthy teeth, because that is the first time I ever heard of an untrustworthy teeth.
I'm personally really big when I take interest in somebody, of course, like, you know, personality and looks, they're all good. The first thing I look at are teeth. And I'm not necessarily happy with my teeth. I've tried like the whole Invisalign thing 2 times. It just didn't stick because I like to eat. So I'm not necessarily saying I have perfect teeth, but the first thing I notice is a guy's teeth. And I feel like you're guys, people in general, but specifically guys, since I laser focus on that, I can tell a lot by a guy's teeth. And he had untrustworthy teeth. Has untrustworthy teeth.
Right, he still got his same teeth.
Right, he's got the same teeth.
And I guess I won't comment on whether he was then perceived to be an untrustworthy person, but based upon his teeth. But if Ollie wants to, she could say whether she was right about the teeth or not.
I think I was spot on about the teeth. I'm always right about the teeth. It's not that I didn't have him like booked for that. Like I didn't stamp him like, boom, untrustworthy teeth, you know, bump you and you trying to get with my best friend. It was like, you got untrustworthy teeth and I'm gonna keep all four of my eyes on you. So yeah, that's how I felt about that. I thought you were gonna bring up a different incident. I thought you were gonna bring up the birthday thing. Where you want me to tell it? Dirty laundry, this dirty laundry. I thought you were gonna bring
that. I don't know what you're talking about, because the thing that I'm thinking about with birthday is more something that he would say. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I'm referring to the reason for tardiness that day, that night.
Oh, remember? Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about now. Which is funny, because there's something else that... that night just has so many things that happened. That was an interesting night.
Yeah.
But that has a lot of funny things that I think about with other people too.
Yeah.
Some involving a car, some involving someone I used to talk to, my ex, just so many people. It was a very eventful night. But did you have any other ones you wanted to do for me before we close?
I feel
out
like I have a lot, but just off the top of my mind, I can't think of it. But I'm sure as soon as we finish this recording, I'll be like, dang, just say this and that and this and that. Because I like all the time randomly when I think about things that you or even people in our friend group have done. I'm always like just randomly laughing in my head. So yeah.
We're a funny bunch. Yeah, hopefully you guys as listeners agree that you're like, that Mandy and Ollie, y'all are hilarious.
Yeah. And even if y'all don't, we know we are. Okay.
I guess.
Okay. All right. So moving on to our underappreciated awards. I want to give this week's underappreciated award to the man, the not myth, the legend, Kirk Franklin. My family grew up in a Kirk Franklin heavy, Kirk Franklin the choir, Kirk Franklin the family choir, Kirk Franklin the Christmas edition family choir, all those. We grew
Kirk
up
Franklin
in a big
nation.
New nation, all that, like all that Kirk Franklin heavy household. And I've been trying to like recenter and repeat myself, P-E-A-C-E, and just find some kind of sense of calmness and stillness to kind of move throughout the week. And a lot of his songs have been very helpful. Some of them have been too like emotionally pulling, and I'm like, all right, I gotta change this. But I've definitely toned down the Shake My Body, Shake My Body, Shake My Body songs and just kind of been like chilled out. And I don't know if this is like a placebo thing where I'm like, well, I'm listening to Kirk Franklin, so I'm going to chill out now. Or if I'm just like, because Kirk Franklin is playing, now I am at a chill moment. I don't know, you know, chicken or egg. I don't know which came first. But it's been very helpful for me. And when I can make it to like the skip button when it gets to like teary-eyed songs, then it's also been very helpful. So shout out to him and New Nation and the fam choir.
Kirk Franklin's definitely that dude. Mm-hmm. His verses with Fred Hammond was one of the mm-hmm. verses that, especially at the time when they chose to do it, when, again, there was like a lot of police brutality stuff happening. That's specifically why they chose them. They were like, we need healing. We need peace. We need something to give us just like a break in resolve from all of the chaos that's happening. And I definitely feel like his music does that. Because I feel like that's the goal and what he tries to do as an artist. Because Kirk Franklin, for those who don't know, is not a singer.
Nope. he's not. I think he's a musical curator.
Yes, like he writes his songs and, you know, the music and the melodies, and that typically is why he has to work with singers in a choir, because he himself cannot sing, but mm-hmm. he still creates an environment of music that is very open to all types of people, even though it's supposed to be you know, gospel Christian music and right. glorification to God. He makes it very accessible to all people to really be able to get what they need out of it.
Mm-hmm.
His Christmas album is one of my favorite Christmas albums.
Nice.
So if y'all are looking to something to listen to at Christmas time, I would definitely say listen to his. Mm-hmm. It's a vibe, it's a bop. And he does get you in those moments where you're like emotional, but I think out of the two of us, I'm the one that has voluntary cry moments. So I'm like, all right, we're gonna cry today, or we're gonna cry this weekend, or we're gonna cry this month. So especially if it just if I start crying, I'm like, I guess we're crying today, guys. So if you're in one of those moments where you're like, I'm already in a deep cry, or I need a deep cry, or I'm feeling emotional or just burdened or whatever, don't be afraid to listen to some Kirk Franklin to where you can get the cry out, but also get some peace if you don't want to cry, if you just want to feel warm. I feel like his music is warm.
And comforting a lot of times. I am over here like laughing in my head now that you say that, because again, I've said this before, I can probably count on one hand the times I've seen you cry, and over this decade, a year of friendship. But you will openly cry in private. But for me, if I'm starting to cry in private, I'm like, what are you doing? Stop it, stop it. But openly to you, I'm like, Mandy. So that's also weird. I don't know why that is. Don't know why that is. Anywho, who's receiving your underappreciated award for today?
My underappreciated award, I might have already given this to them, or I speak of this show all the time, but it's going to The Challenge, which in my opinion is the best show to ever come on MTV, the best show that is still on MTV. Anyone who is a Challenge fan can't understand why MTV shows 24 hours of ridiculousness, but only shows the one season of The Challenge at a time, and will never show that's any seasons on MTV ever again. They're just like, you can't watch, we can't watch The Challenge anymore. You don't get any repeats of episodes. They're just really stingy with the show that is really the only reason why I still watch MTV to speak of. And recently, two older seasons of The Challenge became available on Netflix, and I busted through one of them in a day, like less than a day. I was like, all right, let's go,
What?
let's do this. It wasn't a very
Okay.
long season, but I'm still just like, I love the show. So many people that are still in the media industry in so many different lanes come from that show. So the season that I watched was The Inferno 2. It has Karamo on that season, who is from Queer Eye now, and it's also just like a general television host. He's
Okay.
on there. It has Mike the Miz, who is a wrestling guy, and he was really starting his wrestling career while he was still on the show, but now he's like a big major wrestling guy, plus has his own reality TV show. A lot of people who are still on The Challenge were on that season, and one of the people, Beth, which who was always known as like being a BITCH, but like I remember she popped back up on my timeline because her kids go to the same school that Blue Ivy goes to. So I'm just like, I don't, which I don't know if that directly makes her a celebrity, but in my eyes, your children are celebrity adjacent.
Right.
So yeah, I'm just like, the show breeds a lot. Oh, it had Jamie Chung on there, who's still like a successful, who became a successful actress.
Actress, yeah. Okay.
There's
I
just a
didn't know
lot
she
of
was
people.
on there.
Just that one season in particular, and there's just like so many more people, of course, who are recognizable from the show. But it's just an interesting show because it gives you like all the reality TV drama that you want, in terms of, but it also gives you competition, and I feel like it's created like this these levels of that other shows, like I don't, like Survivor weren't really doing for me anyways. I've never been into CBS like that. I'm not a CBS type of girl, but Viacom and CBS have recently merged, so now it's like
Okay.
anyone who was on a CBS show can now go on to The Challenge. So people who were on Survivor are now on The Challenge. So to me, that proves how The Challenge is a superior show. So I would just like for people to know that The Challenge is that show, and the current season, it's very fresh into the season, but oh my gosh, is it good? Like I literally was just like screaming, and I was just like, this might be the best season because it's got old people, it's got new people, it's got MTV people, it's got CBS people, it's got UK people, it's got US people, it's got twists, it's got turns, it was filmed during COVID, it's got everything. So
okay, that sounds so exciting. I do have a question. Would you advise, because people don't know who all these people are, like I haven't seen every single challenge and every single challenge part two and all this good stuff, but I've seen enough to know who people are. Would you advise that people find like the first show day one and work their way up to current shows, or would you say dive right in right now?
Well, at this point I would say dive right in, because there are so many people from other shows. I don't feel like there's a way for you to be able to know who everyone is anyways, because at this point, like I said, I don't watch CBS shows. So a lot of the people who are from the CBS shows, I don't know anything about them beforehand. But like my sister watches CBS shows, being Big Brother and Amazing Race and Survivor. So she knows who those people are. The MTV shows that they pull from will be like X on the Beach, or they used to just do Real World and Road Rules, but those two shows don't exist anymore. So now they have to pull from other shows. And some of them I watch and some of them I don't watch. And then UK, I have watched some UK shows, specifically like Love Island, or whenever I go to the UK, I like to watch certain things. But I also like to watch things that aren't really like for young, like young people specific. I like to watch Four in a Bed, which is about people who own bed and breakfasts rating each other's bed and breakfasts. So they're not going to end up on the challenge. I mean, it's interesting because they're not going to end up on the challenge. So in terms of like, you know, if you're an American watching this and there's UK people, you're not going to know who they are. I don't feel like it's necessary to know who the people are in order to watch, but it definitely affects the game, because people then create alliances from things that they have from just having been on these other shows and feeling like they have like these relationships with folks. But I feel like they give you enough information that it's like, this person's from this show, so that you don't have to actually watch the whole show in order to form a strong opinion.
I was going to say, I think I'm more so like the background, like, well, this person used to date this person. This was an alliance with this person on this show, but then they broke the alliance. So that's why they got beef on this season. So,
but and that definitely comes up.
Right.
But I feel like they're gonna tell you enough that you're like, okay, that makes sense. Although me and my sister were, you know, we're constantly pulling from all of our resources of things that we watch and explain to each other. So it is helpful to have someone that can tell you all that. But I feel like, you know, that's what YouTube is for.
YouTube and Google. Does break it down. That's accurate. That's accurate. And the pause button. Would you like to tell the listeners where they can find us?
Yes, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter at MNO Podcast, where you can also slide in our DMs or send comments to things that we post. Tell us how you like the episode. You can also send your question, comments, and concerns to Mandy and Ollie at gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. We haven't had a listener letter all year.
Dang, is that accurate?
It's very accurate. We got our first sets of guests, but we haven't had a listener letter. So if you have thoughts about the show, the podcast, please let us know. And of course, don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, so that you know when we drop a new episode.
Sounds good to me. I hope to hear from you guys soon. Before the year's over, you got, remember them days? 14?
How many days? To the end of the year.
To the end of the year. All right. Bye.
Bye.
You look so familiar. Yeah, you look so familiar. Don't I know you from back when? Yeah, way, way back when.